Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I'm going to chat today. I want to chat today about a topic that is, you guys might not know this about me. If you didn't, you do now, that I'm a quite superstitious individual. I won't talk about certain topics because I feel like that'll bring me bad. I'll be manifesting that kind of energy. I know this sounds like must sound crazy to a lot of people. Or let's say, well, this guy's created an AI podcast talking to a sloth and a donkey. We already knew he was crazy, but this is the final proof. But there's certain things that I won't talk about. It's called magical thinking, I believe. But this is an important one. So I'm going to protect names for obvious reasons. But I'm going to describe something and ask you, what do you think? What does science or what do people think about this? And I'll say one more thing before we talk about this case, which is that I've already told you I'm a definite believer in the paranormal, the world of spirits, ghosts, you name it. So I don't have to be convinced that there is something beyond the physical realm that we experience. So there, a family friend, an old elderly couple in their 80s, the husband passed away last week, and the wife has had Alzheimer's for a number of years, and I think is in some kind of institutional care, or certainly it's definitely on the more severe end, whereby I think she's really out of, you know, touch with reality, doesn't know what's happening, doesn't remember names, recognize faces, all the rest of it. Horrible, horrible, tragic. And at the funeral that a family member attended, someone relayed that they were talking to the wife of the after her husband had passed, and uncharacteristically she stopped her carer to say, "I know he's passed." She had no way of knowing this information before, and that, again, I think a lot of people hear cases like this, I'm sure there's just so many of them, and say that's spooky, or oh, that's just coincidence, or and they weren't even living together. You know, he was in hospital. But anyway, anyone who's worked in end of life care and hospice care has stories like this. I know because besides there being a couple of books on the topic, one of which I have to admit I've bought but never read, it's called The Six Regrets of the Dying. If you work with someone who just works with this patient population, the dying, they'll tell you so many stories that just seem to defy anything possible, anything that's possible scientifically. Now, again, I mentioned that for me, I don't need any convincing. I believe that if you ask me what happened in this case, I think that when people are moving on from this earthly existence, spirits connect and reach out. I've certainly had some experiences before, both of my grandparents, both of whom I was very close to and were fantastic people before they passed. I recall waking up both times with this really bizarre cold feeling, like the air was sucked out of a room. I've never had in any, like, not just physically cold, but like your breath would be sucked in, and feeling something was really off. And that was the day before both of them passed. So I believe it. I think spirits are real. I think that they, before they move on, they kind of reach out to family and loved ones. And if you ask me what happened, I'd say I think that's what happened, or etc. But okay, the other half of the argument says, Daniel, you're nuts. That's not possible. There's no scientific proof of spirits or the rest of it. So Herman and Corin, let's pit the two elements against one another here. This, I believe, has been a well-documented phenomenon, and there's other phenomena like it. Without asking either of you, because in the most normal way that a man can say this about two AI-generated podcast hosts, I have great respect for both of you, and I don't want to force you to choose sides of this argument. So rather than doing that, let's just lay out the what has been said about this topic and probably studied to some degree, I imagine. But more than that, it's just an everyday thing that I think probably people recall and recount in places all over the world that poses a fundamental challenge to our most basic, the most basic things we think we know about reality, that one lives a life, one dies, and then that's kind of the end of it. Over to you, Herman and Corn.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am here in our home in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, ready to dive into the deep end today. And I mean the really deep end.
Yeah, no kidding. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note that honestly gave me a bit of a chill. He was talking about this concept of magical thinking and his own superstitions, but then he shared a story about a family friend that justifies a lot of what we consider to be the standard rules of biology and communication.
It is a classic case of what researchers sometimes call a deathbed coincidence, or a crisis apparition. Daniel mentioned this elderly couple where the husband passed away in the hospital, and his wife, who had been struggling with severe Alzheimer's for years, somehow just knew. She told her caregiver, "I know he is gone," even though no one had told her yet.
That is the part that gets me. When you have a condition like Alzheimer's, your connection to the present moment, to names, faces, and current events is often so frayed. And yet, in that specific moment, she had this crystal clear realization. Daniel also mentioned his own experiences with his grandparents, feeling that sudden coldness in the air, like the breath was being sucked out of the room.
It is something that people have reported for centuries, Corn. And while it is easy to dismiss it as just grief or coincidence, there is actually a surprising amount of documented research into these occurrences. It really forces us to look at the nature of consciousness and whether it is truly confined to the 3 pounds of gray matter inside our skulls.
That is exactly where I want to go today. We are on episode 432, and we have touched on some of this before. I remember back in episode 362, we looked at paranormal data and ancient lore, but today I want to focus on the modern research. What does the science actually say about these intuitive connections at the moment of death?
Well, to start, we have to talk about the sheer scale of these reports. The Society for Psychical Research, which was founded in London back in 1882, actually conducted one of the first major scientific inquiries into this. It was called the Census of Hallucinations. They surveyed 17,000 people and published their findings in 1894. They found that a significant number of people had experienced a vivid vision or a sense of a loved one's presence at the exact moment that person died, despite being miles apart.
17,000 is a huge sample size for the late 19th century. What was the takeaway? Did they find a statistical significance beyond what you would expect from random chance?
They did. The researchers, including people like Edmund Gurney and Frederick Myers, calculated the probability of seeing a vision of a person on the same day they died by pure chance. They found that the number of reported coincidences was actually 440 times higher than what chance would predict. Even if you account for people misremembering the exact timing, that is a massive statistical outlier that suggests a real, non-local connection.
So, it is not just a few spooky stories. It is a recurring pattern in human experience. But how do we move from people saying they felt something to actual modern research? Because I know there are clinics and university departments that look into this now.
Exactly. One of the most prominent figures in this field today is Dr. Bruce Grayson at the University of Virginia. He is part of the Division of Perceptual Studies, or DOPS. They have been documenting these cases for decades. They look at near-death experiences, of course, but also what they call shared death experiences.
Shared death experiences. That sounds like what Daniel was describing with the husband and wife. Is that when a healthy person feels like they are participating in the dying process of someone else?
Precisely. Dr. Raymond Moody, who actually coined the term near-death experience back in the 1970s, wrote an entire book on shared death experiences. He found that bystanders, often family members or hospice nurses, report seeing a light in the room or feeling the spirit of the dying person leave the body. Sometimes they even report seeing the life review of the person who is passing away.
That is wild. It is one thing for the person dying to have a subjective experience, but for a second, healthy person to witness it. That suggests there is something objective happening in the environment, or at least a shared mental state that goes beyond individual imagination.
And that brings us back to Daniel's story about the wife with Alzheimer's. There is a specific phenomenon called terminal lucidity. This term was actually popularized by the researcher Michael Naum. It describes when patients with severe cognitive impairment, like late-stage dementia or even those in comas, suddenly become completely clear and rational shortly before they die. They might recognize their children, have a deep conversation, and then pass away shortly after.
I have heard of that. It is almost like the brain's hardware is broken, but the software suddenly finds a way to run perfectly for a final few minutes. How does mainstream neuroscience explain that? If the neurons are physically degraded, how can the consciousness reappear so vividly?
The short answer is, it cannot easily explain it. If you believe that the brain produces consciousness like a radiator produces heat, then when the radiator is broken, the heat should be gone. But if you look at the brain as a filter or a receiver like a radio, then terminal lucidity makes more sense. If the radio is damaged, you get static. But maybe at the end of life, the connection to the physical body loosens and the consciousness is able to bypass the broken filter for a moment. Recent research by Alexander Bathiani suggests this points to an indestructible core of personhood that remains intact even when the brain is failing.
That is a fascinating analogy. It reminds me of some of the things we discuss regarding non-local consciousness. If our minds are not just in our heads, but a part of a larger field, then it will explain how a wife could know her husband died miles away. It is like two particles being entangled.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Korn. Quantum entanglement is the go-to analogy here. If two particles have interacted in the past, they remain connected regardless of distance. If you change the state of one, the other changes instantly. Albert Einstein famously called this spooky action at a distance. If human consciousness has a quantum component, which some physicists like Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff suggest in their orchestrated objective reduction theory, then maybe deep emotional bonds create a kind of entanglement.
So, when that bond is physically severed by death, the other person feels the snap, so to speak. But Herman, let's be the devil's advocate for a second. A skeptic would say that we only hear about the hits. We do not hear about the thousands of times someone felt a chill or had a bad dream and their loved one was perfectly fine. Is there any way to filter out that confirmation bias?
That is the big hurdle. But the researchers at DOPS try to focus on cases with verifiable details. For example, Dr. Grayson often tells a story about a patient who had an out-of-body experience during a suicide attempt. She accurately described a spaghetti stain on his tie that he had been trying to hide all day. He was in a different room when she was unconscious, yet she saw it. When those details match up perfectly with a reality the person could not have known, the coincidence argument starts to fall apart.
Right, the specificity is the key. It is not just, I feel sad, it is, I know we passed at 4:15 p.m. and there was a blue vase on the table. When you get that level of detail, it becomes much harder to dismiss.
And we are actually getting better at measuring the biology of this. There was a major study called AWARE2, led by Dr. Sam Parnia at NYU Langone, which was published recently. They monitored the brain waves of patients during cardiac arrest and found that even when the heart had stopped for up to an hour, some patients showed spikes in brain activity associated with higher mental functions. They were seeing markers of hyperconsciousness, not just random firing. It suggests the brain might actually become more active as it transitions toward death.
That really challenges the materialistic view of reality, does it not? If these experiences are backed by electrical signatures in a flatline brain, then the afterlife is not just a religious hope, but a potential biological or physical transition. It suggests that consciousness is something that can exist independently of the body.
That is the ultimate implication. If you can perceive things without your physical senses, and if you can communicate without physical means, then who we are is not defined by our physical form. It is a terrifying thought for some, but incredibly comforting for others. It means that the connection we have with people we love is not just a chemical reaction in our brains, but something more fundamental to the fabric of the universe.
I think about that story Daniel told about the husband and wife. Imagine the comfort that must have brought the family, even in their grief. To know that even though her mind was failing her, her heart or her spirit was still perfectly tuned into him. It suggests that the essence of a person remains intact, even when the brain is struggling.
And it also makes you wonder about the evolutionary purpose of such a thing. Why would we have the ability to feel a loved one's death from afar? Is it just a byproduct of our social nature, or is it a survival mechanism? Or perhaps it is just the way the universe is wired, and we are only now beginning to develop the tools to measure it.
Well, that is the thing. Our tools are still very primitive when it comes to consciousness. We can measure brainwaves, we can measure blood flow, but we cannot measure the content of a thought or the depth of a feeling. We are basically trying to understand the ocean by looking at the ripples on the surface.
That is a great way to put it. And it leads to some interesting second-order effects. If we accepted these phenomena as real, how would it change our healthcare system? How would we treat people in hospice? Right now, we often sedate people who start having visions because we think they are experiencing delirium. But if those visions are actually a meaningful part of the transition, we might be interrupting something incredibly important.
Exactly. We might be medicating away the most profound moment of a person's life. I have read accounts where people were terrified of dying until they had one of these experiences, either themselves or through a loved one. It completely removes the fear of death, and if you remove the fear of death, you change how people live.
That is the real takeaway. It is not just about what happens at the end, but how it informs the middle. If we are all connected in this non-local way, then how we treat each other matters even more. Every action, every word might be echoing in a field that we all share.
It is a lot to chew on. I want to go back to the research for a second, though. Have there been any attempts to induce these states or to measure them in a lab? I know there is the whole work with psilocybin and end-of-life anxiety, but what about the telepathic aspect?
There have been Ganzfeld experiments, which try to test for extrasensory perception by putting people in a state of sensory deprivation. They have shown some statistically significant results over the years, though they are still controversial. But the most compelling evidence still comes from those spontaneous cases. You cannot really replicate the emotional weight of a loved one dying in a laboratory setting. That raw, intense bond seems to be the catalyst for these events.
It is the signal strength. A laboratory test is like trying to pick up a radio station from 3 states away with a coat hanger. But the death of a spouse is like being right next to the transmitter. The energy of that moment is what makes the signal break through the noise of our everyday lives.
Right. And most of the time, our brains are busy doing exactly what they were designed to do, which is to keep us focused on the physical world. We have to find food, we have to avoid traffic, we have to pay the bills. Our brains filter out all the extra noise so we can survive. But in those moments of extreme crisis, the filter drops.
This really connects back to what Daniel said about being superstitious. Maybe what we call superstition or magical thinking is just our intuition trying to make sense of these underlying connections that we do not fully understand yet. We label it as weird or supernatural because it does not fit into our current textbook of physics.
Exactly. Remember, 100 years ago, the idea of wireless communication would have seemed like magic. Sending your voice through the air to be picked up by a box on the other side of the world? That is a shared death experience for someone from 1800. We just happen to find the physical mechanism for it. Maybe one day we will find the physical mechanism for consciousness to consciousness communication.
I hope we do. It would certainly make the world feel like a less lonely place. But until then, we have these stories, and I think it is important that we keep collecting them. If any of you listening have had an experience like this, where you just knew something had happened before the phone rang, we would love to hear about it. You can reach out through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
Yes, please do. The more data points we have, the clearer the picture becomes. And honestly, it is just fascinating to hear how these moments have impacted people's lives. It is one of the most human things we can talk about.
It really is. Now, Herman, before we wrap this section up, is there any specific case from the DOPS archives that really stands out to you? Something that even a skeptic would find hard to ignore?
There is a classic case involving a woman named Redwing. She was a Native American woman who had a very close relationship with her daughter. One day, she was sitting in her house and she suddenly saw her daughter standing in the room, looking distressed and covered in water. She knew immediately that her daughter had drowned. She even told her husband the exact time it happened. It turned out her daughter had been in a boating accident miles away at that exact moment. The detail of the water is what makes it so striking. It was not just a feeling of dread, it was a visual representation of the physical reality of the death.
That is incredible. And it perfectly mirrors Daniel's point about the air being sucked out of the room. It is a physical manifestation of a distant event. It makes you wonder if we are all just swimming in the same soup, and we only notice the temperature change when someone leaves the pool.
That is a very corn analogy, but I like it. We are all part of the same fluid system.
Well, I try. So, let's talk about the practical side for our listeners. If someone is going through this, or if they have a loved one in hospice, what should they take away from this discussion?
First, I would say, trust your intuition. If you feel a sudden urge to call someone, or if you have a strange dream, do not just dismiss it. Even if it turns out to be nothing, the act of reaching out is valuable. And if you are with someone who is dying, and they start talking to people you cannot see, or if they seem to have a sudden moment of clarity, lean into it. Do not try to correct them or tell them they are hallucinating. Just listen. There is often a lot of peace to be found in those moments if you allow them to happen.
That is great advice. I think we also need to be more open about these experiences. There is a lot of shame or fear of being called crazy, which prevents people from sharing these stories. But, as we have seen today, these are not isolated incidents. They are a documented part of the human experience.
Absolutely. We need to normalize the mystery. Just because we cannot explain it with our current science does not mean it is not real. It just means our science has more room to grow.
I love that. Normalize the mystery. That could be the tagline for the whole show, really.
It really could. And speaking of the show, we have been doing this for over 400 episodes now, and the feedback from you all is what keeps us going. If you are enjoying these deep dives into the weird and the unexplained, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and helps us keep these conversations going.
Yeah, it really does. Every rating and review makes a difference. And if you want to dig into our archive, head over to myweirdprompts.com. You can search for topics like near-death experiences, quantum consciousness, or even that episode 3062 we mentioned earlier.
We have covered a lot of ground over the years, but I feel like we are still just scratching the surface of what is out there.
I agree. There is so much more to explore. Daniel, thanks again for sending that prompt in. It really sparked a great conversation today. It is nice to have a housemate who keeps us on our toes with these kinds of questions.
Definitely. Though I might be a little more careful next time I feel a draft in the house, I will be wondering if it is just the old Jerusalem stone or something more.
Knowing this house, it is probably both.
Fair point. Well, this has been My Weird Prompts. I am Herman Poppleberry.
And I am Korn. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.
Until then, keep an eye on the ripples.
And keep questioning the soup. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
So, Herman, I was thinking about one more thing before we totally sign off. You mentioned the energy transfer. Do you think there is any connection to the actual physical laws of thermodynamics? You know, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It only changes form.
It is a classic argument in the spiritual community. If consciousness is a form of energy, then where does it go? The law of conservation of energy would suggest it has to go somewhere. The problem is, we do not have a way to define consciousness as a physical energy yet. We can measure the electricity in the brain, which does dissipate as heat after death, but is that all there is? Most of these researchers would say no, there is a non-physical component that we just do not have the math for yet.
It is like trying to solve an equation when you do not know what half the variables are.
Exactly. We are working with a very incomplete set of equations, but that is what makes it exciting. We are the explorers on the edge of the map.
And the map is getting bigger every day. All right, for real this time. Thanks for listening.
Take care, everyone.
We will see you next time on My Weird Prompts. Check out the website for the RSS feed and the contact form. We really do read everything you send in.
We do. Even the really weird stuff. Especially the really weird stuff.
Especially the weird stuff. Goodbye!
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.